the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Over the weekend or in the last couple of days, Donald Trump has told reporters twice that he had spoken to a former president who praised his actions in Iran, saying, "I wish I did what you did." Now, as it happens, aides to all four of the living presidents, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama and Joe Biden, issued statements to CNN saying there's no record of any communications between any of them and President Donald Trump. Do you think Carl Thomas, is he maybe involved in seances? Is he talking to dead presidents to get approval?
Well, you mean like, let's see, Hillary Clinton spoke with Eleanor Roosevelt, as I recall, and she had been dead for a number of years. The qualifying line here is there's no record. When a president picks up the phone and calls the phone number of another president, there doesn't necessarily have to be a record. A president can meet with people who are not on the schedule at the White House, and he can make phone calls that are not on the schedule of either one. But it sounds like something Bill Clinton would say. He said other things similar before. So, this continuing war, now what, over 2 weeks, it's amazing. If we had applied the same standard to World War II that we're applying to this, a war that went on for 5 years, Hitler would be ruling Germany and Japan would be right along with him.
Well, it was nearly 6 years. Just the Americans got involved a bit later than everybody right. else in the Second World War, Cal. But you see, the other thing is, could it be that Donald Trump is just simply lying? Like, he lies about so many things. And when he tells us that, we were so close to having a nuclear weapon been fired at Europe, that when it comes to that as well, he's just lying.
Well, that wouldn't be the first time if he was lying, Matt. But look, this is not a war in which we can have conscientious objectors. When you look at the statements, when you look at the actions, when you look at the objectives of the mullahs in Iran and others around the world who are preaching hatred of Jews, hatred of all things Christian, hatred of the West, and hatred of Israel, and then they back that up with terrorist attacks, whether it would be Hamas or Hezbollah or a number of these other organizations, you can't say, well, I don't want to be involved, like French President Macron has said. He said, this is not our war. Well, it is his war, and it's our war because it is a war that is based on religious ideology. And when you have an ideological system that is based on a belief that your God wants everybody who you disagree with dead and their land occupied, you've got a serious problem here that no negotiating is going to solve.
Have you noticed that Pete Hegseth cited God as a reason for what America is doing, only to be slapped down by Pope Leo for that?
Yeah, well, I think that war is a very, very unfortunate thing. But as Scripture says, there will be wars and rumors of wars, which I'm sure the Pope has read in the New Testament, until the return of the Messiah.
So do you think, has Pete Hegseth a better line to God than the Pope in deciding as to whether war is appropriate or not? And
no,
is there any difference between Pete Hegseth and others in the Trump administration citing God than there is to the Iranians saying that they have a religious mandate for doing what they do?
Well, I think the difference, you're engaging in a theological and moral equivalency here. It's like during the system of the Soviet Union, the communist system, where certain liberals in the United States were trying to equate our ideology with theirs. It's just a different one, a disagreement. Look, I think you have to be very, very careful when you invoke the name of God in the defense or in the promotion of a political policy. And I think a case could be made, religion aside, that the Iranian regime must be destroyed, must not be allowed to create a nuclear weapon or ICBMs to deliver them. You've seen what's happening now with the missiles even hitting supposedly friendly Arab nations in the region. If they can do that now to some people who believe religiously as they do, think what they can do with the so-called infidels throughout Europe and eventually the United States.
Let's hear a little bit of Donald Trump from the Oval Office yesterday with our Taoiseach Micheál Martin, in particular in relation to nuclear weapons when he said, if he hadn't attacked Iran, then nuclear war would have come to Europe.
For 48 years, they've been bad players, vicious players, and you can't let them have a nuclear weapon. If they got a nuclear weapon, I would say they would have used it within 24 hours after having it. And they would have had it if we didn't bomb them out from that great raid with the B-2 bombers 8 months ago or so. You would have had a nuclear war in the Middle East and maybe beyond. I think it would have hit Europe. Maybe not Ireland, but it would have hit Europe. I think you would have been a nice piece of it. It all gets you. It's big enough that you would have been affected. They would have hit Europe.
Larry Donnelly, I'm old enough, I think you're old enough as well, to remember 2003 and the excuse for the invasion of Iraq, the weapons of mass destruction, which weren't there. They were invented. It was a complete and utter lie. Why should anyone believe Donald Trump when he says this stuff about how close Iran apparently is and was to having nuclear weapons?
Well, they shouldn't. And the fact is that most people do not. If you look at the opinion polling in the United States, they don't believe that this threat was imminent at all. And why would they, to be frank, when how many times have we been told about threats from the Middle East in recent decades and subsequent military intervention by the United States, which, as opposed to ameliorating the situation, has only made things much, much worse. And I think we're facing down the barrel of this yet again. And we need to rewind the clock a little bit. I mean, the Obama administration had an agreement which seemed to be working. Donald Trump tore it up, in my view, largely because he personally despised Barack Obama. And then even in the weeks and days leading up to this sort of surprise invasion or excursion or whatever you want to call it, using Trump's language, on Iran, the negotiations and diplomacy seemed to be working. Trump himself was saying that this was the way forward. Yet at the last minute, whether it's because of the influence wielded by Netanyahu, whether it's because he thought he could get another quick win, he decided upon this course of action. And the fact is that he was already unpopular. Republicans were already in trouble in terms of the midterm elections. And he has made a colossal political error on this front. And I just can't see how he works his way out of it. Despite all the bluster, despite everything else, I just don't see how he works his way out. And I tend to believe that this is only going to make things worse. He has two choices as it stands, either a pullout, having made everything a lot worse, or protracted combat, potentially including American troops on the ground. And if he does so, he's not only signing the death warrant of Americans who will go there to fight, he is also signing the political death warrant of many Republicans who'll be up for re-election in the midterm. So this is a colossal error at every conceivable level, and people don't buy the justification, and they're right not to.
Carl, do you think might Trump double down and send ground troops into Iran?
No, I don't. And two things that Larry said I want to comment on. One was the notion that no attack was imminent. The head of counterterrorism resigned yesterday, saying that very thing to the president in his resignation letter. But what you know, are people suggesting that you have to wait until a nuclear weapon is formed and put on top of an ICBM before you say, okay, the attack is imminent?
Sorry, Cal, why haven't you invaded North Korea, so?
Because you went there, Matt, and I respect your visit there with your buddy Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, it's a serious point, though,
yeah,
because the North Koreans are more advanced in relation to developing long-range weapons and nuclear weapons than the Iranians.
Yeah.
And if that really is the reason, and if it is the reason why Iran has been bombed to smithereens at the moment, then the logic would suggest then it has to be North Korea next. But suddenly, all because there was a meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un back in 2017, that seems to be all conveniently forgotten about.
Well, I think Cuba's got to be next, given the loss of electricity there, and people are starting to get stirred up and demonstrating in the streets. That doesn't mean we're going to nuke Cuba, but I think the press for freedom, whether it's in Cuba or Venezuela, or if we can get the unarmed people somehow protected who had been demonstrating in the streets against the regime in Iran before the mullahs murdered by an estimated 30,000 of them, showing who the real leaders of the country want to be. Look, war is messy. Why we're not bombing North Korea? I mean, that's just not going to happen. I mean, I think the word has gone out to Kim that if you try anything other than just practicing missile launches, you're going to be wiped out as well. But I can't answer that question. I'm not Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and I'm not the president.
Let me go back to you, Larry Donnelly, because do you think is Donald Trump genuinely surprised to discover that NATO will not come to his assistance in relation to the Strait of Hormuz? Did he really think... Was he so much of a bully that he actually thought he could do what he's been doing in relation to not supporting Ukraine sufficiently, that he could be threatening to take over Greenland, that he could be shouting and roaring at fellow NATO members and putting extra tariffs on them, and that they would suddenly turn around and say, yeah, but whatever you want us to do, boss, in the Straits of Hormuz, we'll do that for you?
No, I don't think so. I think this is very tactical political messaging because of what I've said a few minutes ago. And in fairness to Cal, he would be on the same in the same notes for a long time. He's a traditional conservative. Trump busted that all up and came in on a totally different message. Trump is very much aware that his America First crowd are very, very divided on this. Indeed, the Vice President of the United States hasn't said a word about this, saying that this is a good idea, because everybody knows he is very deeply opposed to this. So there's a political audience out there among the MAGA faithful for going after NATO, for going after the likes of Britain, of France, and the rest of Europe by saying, look, they're not doing their part. They need to help us. And this idea that Europe is weak and cowardly and not spending enough on defense, etc. He is desperately trying to keep them on board with some of that messaging. So I think it's entirely tactical politically. And of course he knows that they're not going to get involved in that. And he's making threats saying, at the same time, we need you, but at the alternative, we don't need you. So again, the about face that the Trump administration has done on this, when this was one of their biggest weapons, one of the biggest strengths that Donald Trump had, was saying, I'm not going to get us involved in forever wars. I'm not going to get us involved in regime change because I recognize the folly of it. And now he's in the thick of it. And we talked at the outset about the conversation he had with the past president. He may well have had that conversation with George W. Bush, because George W. Bush and his acolytes, this is music to their ears. They always wanted to bomb Iran and take it over. Trump has gone down the very path, that failed neoconservative path that America fundamentally rejects, because they got tired of seeing their kids come back in body bags and with mental wounds that'll never heal, for this fantasy about how America was going to make the Middle East somehow want to eat hot dogs and watch baseball. It's nonsense. And I think Trump has made a terrible, terrible error.
Of course, one of the things he also said in the Oval Office yesterday, he started making comments about how terrible Europe is, been overrun by migrants. Let's just hear a little bit of how Taoiseach Micheál Martin responded to that.
First of all, I would say that Europe is still a very good place to live in.
Good.
Just to let you know.
I'm glad to hear it.
And our view is you have to have robust and fair rules around migration. But on the other hand, a lot of people, you know, within the European Union, we have free mobility of people. And in Ireland, our population is growing, but in a very positive way. Our economy is going well because we're attracting a lot of people from Europe and beyond into work, legally and validly, in our country. In fact, I'd love if we could develop a legal pathway between the US and Ireland into the future, because of our history and so on like that, mm-hmm. that we could have a legal pathway, because no one is in favour of illegal migration and so forth. So you have to have robust rules for that. But fundamentally, I think sometimes Europe gets characterised wrongly in terms of it being overrun or whatever like that. It's much more robust now. There's much more stronger mechanism in place to facilitate legal migration.
Between that, Larry, and defending the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer and standing up for Ukraine, what did you make of Micheál Martin's approach towards dealing with Donald Trump yesterday?
I thought in very difficult circumstances, I thought the Taoiseach did a very good job. This was a task that I don't think anybody envied Micheál Martin having to undertake. And of course, I think it was 40 minutes and he got 6 minutes while Trump got 34. But in those 6 minutes, he said some meaningful things. He pushed back on this narrative that is prevalent in the MAGA world about Europe being totally overrun by migrants. He pushed back about Ukraine and Russia and who the true aggressor is here. He raised the issue of immigration, something people said was too, you know, was too touchy. You shouldn't go near it. He did raise the issue of immigration, and he defended Keir Starmer. And some people here, again, a lot of his critics and some on the Irish left, I mean, nothing Micheál Martin did in that meeting was ever going to be good enough for them. But at any rate, he defended Keir Starmer and he defended Europe. And in some respects, he wasn't just there on behalf of Ireland. He was there on behalf of Europe. And if you look at the comments that have been made by people from around the world who cover the Trump presidency, they're saying things like this was superb diplomacy. This was a masterclass. This was excellent. Micheál Martin stood up. He's created a template for Europe. So a lot of that, I think, is warranted. I think in difficult circumstances, the Taoiseach acquitted himself well, and I think he deserves credit for that.
What did you make of our Taoiseach's performance, Cal?
Well, I always appreciate the Taoiseach when he comes or she comes to the United States. It's always a special moment to honor St. Patrick's Day. I thought he did well from his perspective, but I thought there was also a great comment that when you appear in the Oval Office with Donald Trump, you appear as an extra. He's the one who is the star of the show. But look, let me quote something with regard to migration that Muammar Gaddafi, the late leader of Libya, said. We are going to take over Europe without firing a shot, and we're going to do it by demographics. We're going to outbirth the Europeans. The birth rate in Europe, of course, is very, very low. The migrants are having more and more children, and that's the strategy of the United States. Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, let in millions of unvetted migrants into the United States, many of whom were fast-tracked to naturalization as U.S. citizens, and most of whom then were signed up to vote for Democrats. This is the political and religious strategy, and we better wake up to it. Just because we think that all humanity wants to live in peace with one another, and if you just give our enemies something that they want, they'll leave us alone. I give you the Munich conference as a primary example of how that doesn't work.
Cal, are you a Native American?
Yes, I am. I was born here.
No, you're a child of immigrants.
Yeah, right.
Like,
well,
no, Cal, in fairness, let's call a spade here. You know, America is full of immigrants, and it seems, unfortunately, that we have far too many people now who are trying to say the only good immigrant is a white immigrant.
No, Matt, you'll be interested to know that I had a DNA test, and the majority of my DNA is from Ireland, as shameless as that may be for you.
But you're actually proving my point. You're of immigrant stock. Larry Donnelly, what do you mean? Because a lot of this stuff now is just coming down to old-fashioned racism. You're only good enough to be American if you're white, Larry.
Well, there certainly is a big component of that to the debate about immigration. But make no mistake, Matt. I mean, as well as climate change and the climate issue, one of the biggest issues, you know, for the West, broadly speaking, to deal with is going to be the fact that lots of people from the developing world do want to come, whether to the European Union or to the United States. And how to handle that in a humane, generous, but at the same time robust fashion is going to be a significant challenge. There's no question about that. And that's why I thought some of the Taoiseach's language when he said, look, you know, we welcome, Ireland has benefited tremendously from immigration. There's no doubt about that. But we do need to have robust laws. We do need to have a system around all of that, because the fact is that nowhere can take everyone. So generosity needs to be tempered with reality, I think, on the immigration front.
Thank you very much, Larry Donnelly and Cal Thomas.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.